All right, everybody, welcome back. Bio Bros, episode 15. This one's going to be about backyard wildlife conservation. I don't know a ton about this, actually. I've never really had the opportunity to do that kind of thing. So, Alex is going to take the lead for us this time and get more into all of this. We're going to go over some stuff about, like, kind of how to go about all of it and how to do your part, and that'd be helpful. Pretty interesting, cool topic, actually. Something that I want to get into in the future for sure. So, why should we do any of this in the first place? Why should we try to turn our backyard into a conservation area?
So basically, turning your backyard into like a conservation area, or like just not even, it doesn't have to be a conservation area. It just could be a pollinator garden, or it could be just leaving a little bit of your yard that you don't care about, letting it go wild, or like having things like that, like trees and bushes and stuff, to where it's just kind of like a wooded area or something like that. More like what you would see in the wild. The reason it's so important is because it gives wildlife in places like urban areas and cities, or even places like out in the woods and stuff. It gives them a nice sanctuary to find food, find water, find shelter, good place to live, good place to reproduce, raise young, all that kind of stuff. It's really important because it does help significantly help certain species, and it also just helps things like pollinators in general, which a lot of people, when I say pollinators, most people just think of like the butterflies and the bees. But really, pollinators is a very broad term because there's so many things that can be a pollinator. Obviously, your bees, your butterflies, moths, even some wasp species. But also then there's things like some bats, which aren't so much in my area, but I believe there is a few bat species in Shaw's area of Arizona, so out west more, that are nectar feeding bats, so they are pollinators. Here in the east, eastern North Carolina, not eastern North Carolina, eastern US, there is only insectivore bats, so those aren't pollinator species, but I'm pretty sure that there is some pollinator species out like where Shaw is in Arizona. And
Yeah, there's a few out here.
yeah.
We have even night blooming plants, so they instead of blooming during the day, they bloom at night, and that's for bats. It's pretty neat actually. We have that, or even like last week in the Nepenthes episode, a lot of the pollinators for Nepenthes are flies.
Yeah, there's also your normal flies and stuff, but then there's also things that they called flower flies, which are types of flies that they mimic bees, they mimic wasps, they mimic ants. They aren't something that you're gonna look and go, oh, that's a fly, or like you would see in your house, but they are true flies, and they just are also pollinators. There's just pollinators is such a wide and very broad spectrum term, but it's basically these gardens, and like especially pollinator gardens, are really helping wild pollinators as well as birds and even reptiles, amphibians, and even some mammals that you might find in your urban areas, like possums and raccoons and possibly even foxes and mice and things like that. And this is not saying that these garden beds are going to attract these things. Like, don't want people worrying, being like, oh, well, I don't want mice around here, or I don't want possums or raccoons or whatever, so I'm not going to do this garden. Like, if you can change them around to specifically cater towards like pollinators or other things. So you can make it to where it's not as appealing for those mammals or unwanted animals to come in. And even if they do, most of the time, you're probably not even going to know that they're there. But so I keep saying pollinator garden, but let's get into what a pollinator garden is. They tend to be a garden that it doesn't matter really what size you do. You could do it on the window sill of an apartment or like the balcony of an apartment, all the way up to acres and acres of garden space. But it's just where you would plant native flowers, native grasses, even maybe some native shrubs and things like that, just to make it look better for like HOA purposes, or just because at your house you have aesthetics and you'd like to keep certain ways. But you'd plant all these native animals, or not native animals, native plants that some will flower, some have seeds, some are just there for shelter and things like that. And these things, especially like the flowers and stuff, they attract all these pollinators, like bees and flower flies and the butterflies and stuff, and they come in and they get the nectar off of or out of the flowers and then cross-pollinate these plants. Which not only helps your garden continue to look great, it also, some of the species like your bigger-bodied bumblebees or your butterflies that can fly farther distances, they could take that pollen from your garden all the way to a garden 5 kilometers away and go into the plant in someone else's garden, and then they pollinate it, and now that plant is there, going to be seeded and everything. Or it could go to a wild space that needs pollen, where these native plants are around you, and then it would pollinate that. It's they help not only by giving the pollinators food sources, water sources, and things like that, it also helps even your native plants and stuff in the area, because these pollinators who could fly far distances could possibly fly from your garden bed all the way out to these native wild native plant areas that need more pollen and help with genetic diversity and things like that.
Yeah, I've been a point on that one too. You're kind of mentioning things that go farther distances. Where I live is kind of in the path of the classic fly south for winter thing for a lot of species, lots of birds, bats, all of that. Even the monarch butterflies will cut through here every so often. And so if you set out a little rest stop for them, like you're on a road trip, you stop at that little gas station, refuel, if you set that out, it's ultra helpful for them. The bigger and bigger cities get, the farther and farther they go without a rest stop. And just like on a road trip, you know, you go too far without a rest stop, you're broken down on the side of the road.
Oh, yeah.
For them, they just starve. So we see that a lot. Like I've got hummingbird feeders and the migratory hummingbirds, they come through during specific times of the year. You see them. It's pretty cool. Or the bats, like we were talking about, how some of those are pollinators themselves. We still also have a lot of insectivorous bats. So if you see, if you go outside where there's, especially where there's like sports being played at night and there's big lights out, you'll see all the bats coming through at night, just eating all the little bugs and stuff. So if you can help support them on their road trip, that's awesome. They love that.
Oh, yeah. And that's the other thing with pollinator gardens. You're not only helping pollinators by giving the flowers and things like that for them to feed on, you're also helping native birds, native bats, native mammals, native reptiles, native amphibians, because by attracting these insects to that area, then you're also attracting the other native animals that eat said insects or insects. Especially with things like milkweed and other plants that are like specific host plants for caterpillars, because in the spring when birds are nesting and raising young, they are more likely to eat more insects, as well as caterpillars are a big part. It's been studies found that caterpillars are a huge part of fledgling birds' diets. So by having these milkweeds and stuff, where these caterpillars are going to lay their eggs and have, or not the butterflies are going to lay their eggs and caterpillars are hatch, then you're also helping native birds who will then come and predate on some of the caterpillars. Now, will they predate on all of them? No. And that's just how nature works, and you're actually helping the birds in your area by providing another area where there's food. And as well, you're also providing shelter for native birds, native bugs, reptiles, amphibians, all that stuff, because with pollinator gardens, you don't want to do just flowers or, you don't want to do, like, just flowering plants. You want to mix in things like some grasses, and stuff like that, because that gives, once the grasses, while they're alive, they're perfect homes for birds to hide in at night, or bugs to hide in, and then during the winter, even, when that grass has died back, but the grass, the dead stalks are still there, that's still an amazing habitat for birds, as well as the flower stalks and things like that. If you leave them throughout the winter, there's a lot of native bees and native beetles and stuff that will actually overwinter in the dead flower stalks of last year's flowers. So it might not look the best, but don't cut down those stalks or those grasses and things like that. Leave them for the winter, at least till late winter. And by late winter, I mean right about now, which is February, March, because that is when the bees and stuff will start coming out again, and they don't need those flower stalks to hide anymore, as well as leaving things that, like coneflowers or anything that produces seeds the year before. If you leave those with the seed pods and stuff during the winter, that's another food source for birds, because during the winter is their harshest time, that it's hardest for them to find food and things like that, because not many things are producing berries or fruit or seeds or anything. But going around, and they go to these pollinator gardens with all these dead, dried out plants that had seeds from earlier in the year, that's a little nutritious snack for them. And it helps them actually thrive more in the winter.
Yeah, so I've got another question for you. So if you're listening to this, you probably care about wildlife. It's probably a big thing that you care about a lot, most likely. But let's say that you don't, that somebody you know doesn't really care, but they have a nice yard and they don't necessarily know what to do with it. Why should they plant natives? Say that they're like, whatever, I don't care if there's bugs or not, which you should. But what are the other benefits of planting native plants in your landscaping?
There's actually a ton of benefits of planting native plants as landscaping, other than just helping out native wildlife. Because these plants are native to your area, they are used to the climate. They're used to the rainfall, how much you get, how little you get. So you don't really have to water them like you would some of these exotic non-native plants and stuff. They also don't have to fertilize them and things like that like you would for the, again, these non-native stuff, because they're used to the soil. It's a lot easier for them to establish themselves. They'll look better. They normally stay healthier than these exotic plants because they are from here. So they're used to our climate. They're used to the droughts, they're used to the heavy rains, they're used to when it gets freezing or snows, or when it's blazing hot in the summer. They are used to it and have adapted to that environment for millions of years. And they're going to take 10 out of 10 times, they're going to be the better choice for surviving than a non-native plant from out of the country. As well as if you have like a hill or somewhere where you can't get grass to grow, and every time it rains, mud just runs down this hill, or water floods in this area, you can take those areas like the hill, you can plant native plants which have very deep tap roots. Some of them have taproots that go all the way to 10 foot into the ground, as well as there's other species that have really fibrous roots that grab onto basically everything. And their root systems will hold that soil from eroding 10 times better than any non-native species. Things like kudzu, which is an invasive, an extremely invasive species, was used back in the day for erosion control, when in reality, if they had just used native plants and planted things like coneflowers or some of the grasses and things like that, those erosion spots would have actually like been less eroded and things like that than they would with the kudzu. And then on top of that, again, ease of care. You don't have to really worry about diseases as much because they, again, they're used to what's in your area. Now, with some plants, you do have to worry with things like hemlocks and some of all the laurel species, because there is some invasive insects and funguses and diseases and stuff that have come on these invasive plants that are now attacking our natives, and our natives don't have the ability to fight against it. So those kinds of things you do have to look out for. But other than that, they're normally much easier care, much easier. Like, you just don't have to do anything other than plant them. And once they're established, they are basically going to be there for however long you want them to be there.
Yeah. So I'd say is, like, you know how some plants are annuals, right? Is that's the answer I'm going for, where you have to like replant them every year. That doesn't really exist when you're planting native plants, because the reason they're annual isn't because they actually die every year, it's because the outside kills them every year.
Yep.
One way or another, the climate is too harsh and they die. And if you plant native, you don't have to go through that process every year. You don't have to replant your garden. Your garden just grows back.
Yeah. And that's, again, you're saving money in that way, too. And then, so going back to, like, the hill versus an area that gets flooded. If you have an area that, like, floods, you can make a rain garden. And you can plant things like native carnivorous plants, which are always really cool. And I know Shaw likes them a lot.
Yeah, if you're fortunate enough to live in one of those areas.
Yeah, especially in the southeastern U.S., you have a good chance of being able to plant native carnivorous plants like Sarracenia and Venus flytraps and some of the native Droseras that we have here. But other things you can do in rain gardens, there's so much stuff you can plant in there. And then it's, you don't have to worry about it flooding, because that's what they want. They want the water, and they will absorb the water better than just the grass that's now flooded and underwater. So now that I've said why you want to plant natives and what a pollinator garden is and why they're so important stuff, a couple other things that you can do to help wildlife on top of doing a pollinator garden and planting native plants and things like that. So offering things like bird feeders, or you can offer bird baths, or even a little pond, or bird houses, bat houses, all that kinds of things. So offering water sources and food sources like that, you will attract so many more animals to your yard, you won't even know what to do with it. And it's so cool, because, like, my yard, personally, the past couple of years, I've been trying to really do a lot of natives and changing up the yard to where it's more wildlife friendly. So this year, I've been really heavy on the bird feeders and making sure they're full all the time, and then also planting more native plants, which, speaking of which, today I actually planted probably about 25 different plants, and there were all different species. Not every single one of them, but most of them were different species in some of my wildlife gardens that I have. And even in my back area that's just like wooded, I planted some stuff back there, as well as I actually planted some native blueberries. So that's another thing with some of the natives. You can get things like blueberries, blackberries, raspberries, and they not only benefit the wildlife, but they also benefit you, because then you have these food sources that you can just grow, and they'll grow natural. And you won't have to struggle to get them to grow. You won't have to replant them every year because they're native to your area. So they'll come back year after year, and you'll continue to always have that food source for you and the animals. But offering things like as simple as a bird bath is an amazing thing, because then birds can come in, clean off themselves, get a drink of water. And a lot of times, bird baths not only get used by birds and things like that, but they also get used like by pollinators, because they'll come in the shallow water and they'll get some drinks of water, because they can't go into deep water, they would drown. So doing things like that, bird feeders, which will attract so many birds, you get to see so many cool things, and you get to really see how many different birds there are in your area. I think I've recorded at least 20 or 30 different species that have come to my bird feeder alone this year. And it's just so cool, because they're all different shapes, all different sizes. They all have different calls, different colors. It's just an amazing thing to see. And it's exciting to learn about the different species and see them and figure out which species is which and things like that. And then offering things like birdhouses or bat houses. That is an essential thing for the species. Prime example being the eastern bluebird, which I believe there's a bluebird in Shaw's area too, but it is the western bluebird. It's a little different. But the eastern bluebird was not doing well. It was struggling. It was, they were losing numbers rapidly. They just were not doing well in human areas, and they were actually starting to go towards becoming endangered. Well, backyard birders and things like that started doing things like putting up bird boxes that are specifically for the bluebirds, because each bird species will go into a bird box that is a certain size hole or a certain design and things like that, and other species either won't because they don't like how tight the fit is, or they will because or they won't because it's too big, whatever. But these people are putting bird boxes or bluebird boxes in their backyard, and the bluebirds' numbers, the eastern bluebirds' numbers, just skyrocketed back. I have two really old bluebird boxes, and one I just put out this year. And almost every year they've been used. At least one of them has been used. And it's amazing to see, and you get to see these beautiful blue, like bright blue birds with a nice bright orange chest and a little bit of white on them. And when they're nesting in there, you see them every day. You get to hear their little calls and everything, and you're helping a species that was heading towards becoming endangered without the help of people. Which, if you've listened this far, I'm sure that's something that you love and want to do. As well, putting things like ponds or a fountain with moving water in, stuff like that, that helps not only birds and pollinators, but it helps reptiles and amphibians, especially amphibians. If you want to start seeing a bunch of frogs and toads and things like that in your backyard, put in a fountain with moving water. It doesn't have to be super deep. It could be a couple inches deep, as long as the water's moving and stuff. Or put in a pond, and you will attract so many amphibians. It is insane. And it's amazing, because you can hear all their calls during the mating season. Sometimes, if you're lucky, they'll breed and they'll lay tadpoles in your ponds or in the fountains and things like that. And these are just perfect little habitats for them. And they don't do anything to hurt you or hurt your yard or anything like that. It's just cool to see them. And you're helping native wildlife again. Also doing things like leaving a log pile, or if you have to prune some stuff, leaving a brush pile in one of the corners of your yard. That's essential habitat for bugs, birds, anything that can climb into that pile and use it as a place to live or a place to rest. It's an amazing thing for the wildlife. And they will make their homes under those things. And again, if it's in the back corner of your yard, you're never even going to see it. It's a little thing you can do that has a massive impact on wildlife.
Yeah, and so we'll bring it near a wrap here, but about like the certified wildlife habitat things that some states have in as a program. Like, I know they have some of that, but I don't know a ton.
Well, so I know for North Carolina, I'm not 100% sure about other states, but North Carolina has the program where you can apply to get your property considered a certified wildlife habitat. And essentially, that just means that your property provides food, shelter, water, and places for animals to raise young, be that birds, frogs, whatever. And the way it works in North Carolina is you apply for it, you pay, it's either $20 if you don't want like a flag or a sign or anything like that, or it goes up for different things if you want add-ons, but it's $20 and then your yard is considered wildlife certified, as long as you're providing all those things and doing things like not using pesticides and stuff like that. And it will put your yard on a map, and then people can see that. Obviously, people aren't going to come puking at your house or anything like that. But it's just a cool thing to show that wildlife are welcome in your yard and that you are doing your part to help protect wildlife and actually help them thrive in urban areas. And you can get a little sign and put it in your front yard, and the sign essentially just says that it has a little raccoon, at least in North Carolina, it has a little raccoon with a park ranger hat on, and it says certified wildlife habitat, says food, water, cover, and places to raise young, and says this property is recognized for its commitment to sustainably provide the essential elements of wildlife habitat. And I've always thought they're cool. My yard has not yet been certified. I'm probably going to do that this year and get it certified. And again, like I said, it's the $20, and the $20 actually goes back to North Carolina Wildlife Federation, or just the Wildlife Federation, and they use that to help them do more things like restoring forests or restoring prairies where they used to be, or planting more native plants in spaces that definitely could use them, things like that. So the $20 just goes to that kind of stuff. And it's just a cool little thing. It's almost like a souvenir, kind of. And it just shows people that you care about wildlife and you are doing what you need to take care of the wildlife. So, it's a cool thing to have, basically. And one other thing that I had actually forgotten going into, the pesticides and things like that. So, if you're planting native plants and you're planting, you could find certain species and different types that work well, and they help prevent things like mosquitoes from coming in your yard. Like, two of the species that I got today, short tooth mountain mint and slender mountain mint. both are in the mint family. They both have that nice minty smell to them. And mints tend to help prevent mosquitoes and repel them. So not only are you helping native bees and insects and things like that, but you're also helping keep things like things like mosquitoes out of your yard. Which, I don't know about y'all, but most of the time, I hate getting eaten alive in my backyard. I want to be able to go back there and enjoy it. Especially with all these wildlife. I want to go back there and enjoy it and see all these cool little wildlife. But, yeah, that's basically all we're going to get into today about it. If y'all want to hear more episodes about wildlife conservation, like you can do in your backyard and stuff like that, let us know in the comments. I hope y'all enjoyed this episode and enjoyed learning about wildlife conservation in your own backyard and how easy it is to do, and how it also not only benefits you, but benefits wildlife as well. If y'all enjoyed this, leave a comment. If you listened this far, go ahead and comment down below Wild Garden, and that'll show you've listened all the way down to the end. But we will see y'all next week. Hope y'all having a good morning, night, evening, whenever you're listening to this.
Yeah. See you guys, and we'll see you on the next one.